President Bush goes to Quebec City today for the Summit of the Americas. He'll be meeting and discussing trade with the leaders of 33 Western Hemisphere nations. But for commentator Andrew Malcolm, the president's visit to Canada underscores a complicated relationship between neighbors.
Back in January, the new president had an important choice. Where should he go for his first foreign trip? Traditionally, it's Canada, our partner in by far the world's largest bilateral trading relationship. Bush, however, chose Mexico, his neighbor as Texas governor, and the land which has just bumped past Japan to become our second largest trading partner. But Bush is also savvy. His first White House meeting with a foreign leader was with Canada's Prime Minister Jean Chrétien. Now, as the pale blue ice relaxes its grip on the St. Lawrence River, George W. Bush will make his second foreign trip, this one to Canada. As a former border governor, Bush knows diplomacy among neighbors is a delicate business, complicated by familiarity. Americans, their attention riveted on a global agenda, often take Canada for granted, like people lavishing attention on relatives far away while ignoring the in-laws on the next block. Such presumptions do not go unnoticed on the next block. Canada is a polite place, cold and pouty at times, always more liberal than America. It's often admiring and resentful of its noisy, raucous neighbor, especially if that neighbor is headed by a Republican leaning toward limited government. In Canada, which is 10% larger than the U.S., with but one-tenth the population, government is the default provider of everything important. But with nearly half its economy dependent on foreign trade, Canada is also a political realist about how superior it can feel about the Yanks. As his new ambassador to Ottawa, Bush chose Massachusetts Governor Paul Cellucci. A close, quiet friend, Cellucci knows the important role of Canadian money and culture in American life. Brian Adams, Celine Dion, Norman Jewison, Northern Telecom, Canadian Pacific, even Peter Jennings, not to mention oil and gas. Most Americans don't know and don't care that these and countless other contributors to American life are, in fact, Canadian. Canadians, on the other hand, seek to control American influences, even setting the percentage of foreign music allowed on radio stations. This reflects another important fact often overlooked by Americans. The U.S. is always more important to other individual nations than each of them is to the U.S. As the American-born son of two Canadians, I see the complex emotional ties between these two as resembling the relationship between my two older sons. At one point, they were 12 and 8. The oldest knew he had to include the littlest in his games, even if the 8-year-old rarely hit the ball. The 8-year-old counted on that indulgence. Today, 20 years later, they must work constantly on developing a new, more mature relationship, free of patronizing, free of resented dependence, and free of the shallow habits of thought that dominated adolescence. The two are different, hooray, but they are forever linked by family. And that, roughly, is where Canada and the U.S. stand at the ages of 134 and 225. They are forever family in the same neighborhood, eh?
The comments of Andrew Malcolm, a member of the Los Angeles Times editorial board and former Bush campaign aide, is the author of two books on Canada.